from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
To go. Good morning, Thursday morning, the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. We're underway. Steve is just filling out his lineup card for the opener today. And he'll be in the dugout, of course, helping Ricky Renteria manage the White Sox in Kansas City. I'm Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg Boyle alongside Super Joe and Mike Heidemann on the other side of the glass. Steve Grzanich in the newsroom. Mary Vandeveld in Traffic Central. You ready for baseball? I can't wait to get started.
I'm very excited about baseball.
So excited.
Yeah, we need this. We need this from a couple of perspectives. We need it because it's a sign that the weather is turning.
Right.
It's a sign that there will be spring after this long, dark winter. And
as long as it doesn't rain.
Yeah, and actually, forecast isn't great, by the way, in Kansas City. Let's get to the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, it is opening day in baseball. Actually, the season technically started last week when the A's and Mariners played a couple of games over in Japan. But this is really the start of baseball, and it's certainly the start of baseball for us, even though there won't be baseball here till next Thursday. We'll all be at a Guaranteed Rate Field bright and early for the Sox home opener against the Seattle Mariners. But
and the weather next Thursday also says rain, just so you know.
Well, that's a long ways off. The Sox in KC today, where they started the season last year with a couple of wins before they got snowed out. And the Cubs start the season later today in Texas.
Do you believe the season starts too early?
Nope.
I mean, I don't know how you get 162 games.
And the argument is always that you can't balance it out if you have all the cold weather city teams playing in warm climates or in domes to start the season, that it's unfair because they're going to get a bunch of home games later.
You go back to 154. You go back to wood bats. You go back to,
there used to be fewer games.
Chewing tobacco.
Yeah, but it's been a long time. I mean, in your lifetime, were there fewer than 162? I don't think so.
154 was probably a 50s thing.
Yeah, I think
and there
so.
Were no lights back then, too.
Yeah, let's do that, too. No lights.
That way you could stay and watch every game.
Let's dial it all back. All right, let's do the top six at six.
We are in the top six.
Let's keep going with the top six at six.
You gotta be bleeping me! Yes!
All we covered so far is opening day.
Well, let's talk about Kim Fox. The president has tweeted out this morning. I was just on the phone with the president. You know, he calls regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And he now wants an FBI investigation into the Kim Fox mess. It's now the Kim Fox mess because she actually spoke on it yesterday. And it was revealed yesterday, first by a website called Law and Crime, that Kim Fox never really officially recused herself. And the way you recuse yourself, make a note of this. If you're going to recuse yourself, you have to recuse yourself by bringing in a what amounts to an Illinois version of a special prosecutor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can't just go, I'm out. I have a conflict of interest. Super Joe is now in charge. You can't do it that way.
And there's some documents that have to be filed with the court, and there's all kinds of things that have to
be. It's a secret handshake.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of that has to happen. So, Steve, where does this go now?
Good question. According to the president, it's a national, what did he say? It's a national embarrassment. I think you're going to see exactly what we'll have an investigation. Who knows? There might even be a special prosecutor to look into it. The FBI is obviously continuing its Smollett investigation. What the investigation of this process will look like, if the FBI is going to do that, I don't know, because I've never seen anything like this before.
Because mm-hmm. It makes no sense on any level.
Right, exactly.
The motivation of this is, well, there's a lot of theories. And none of them seem to make sense.
There is one note. Attorneys for Smollett put out a news release, I think early yesterday or late yesterday, or early today, where they talk about more than 5,700 cases that have been done with alternative prosecution in Cook County.
Right.
To sort of highlight that what happened here is not really that unusual in terms of either a prosecution that's been put off or some other arrangements have been made. So I think that has to be sort of ferreted out as well, if that's the case. 5,700 cases, that's quite a number of different cases. And obviously we just never hear about those because they don't involve celebrities.
Well, the weird thing is that once he got out, he made it seem like he was innocent. That part is... And then I read in
the He's never taken responsibility.
Yeah, and I read a thing in the New York Times yesterday about how actually he should be out because this is a bigger issue with our legal system and putting the wrong people in jail.
You know, I hear the same thing. That is such nonsense. It is such nonsense to take one case and go, well, of course this is what happened because we have to fix everything. This doesn't fix anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there are some high-profile cases where the opposite of this has happened. You remember a few years ago, a couple, I believe, from Minneapolis, Minnesota, said that they were robbed in Lower Wacker Drive and had all of their jewelry taken.
Uh-huh.
That prosecution was not, that didn't go to court either. They pled guilty to, a lesser charge. They paid a fine. But it was still a guilty plea. It was a disposition of that case that was something other than just expunging a record.
Nobody has had the position to trash this city and trash the police department and also make a mockery of nooses as a black man. None of that has been opportunistic the way this has for Jussie Smollett because he didn't feel like he was getting enough attention on his show.
Yeah, and regardless of how you feel about the president to claim that his supporters were somehow involved
ridiculous.
In an attack on you. That's not fair. That's not right.
Absolutely right. Next.
You gotta be bleeping me! Yes!
All Illinois residents can be able to get new driver's license. I need a new driver's license. I got that Joliet prison picture on mine, and I need to do a new one. I mean, I look like I just got out, and I will commit a crime again.
You do.
That's not a good picture.
Yeah.
State IDs and driver's license starting on Monday that comply with post-9/11 federal requirements aimed at making ID cards more secure. They're going to be available at all 138 driver's services facilities statewide by Monday, beginning October 1st, 2020. Illinois residents will no longer be able to use their current state-issued cards to board domestic flights or enter federal facilities. The new cards are going to have a little gold star in the top right corner. And will cost the same as the old ones. And that's all you need to know.
Can you combine TSA pre-check with your driver's license?
I think the difference now is you don't have to take your shoes off when you're in line at any of the Jussie White facilities.
Oh, that's good.
So that's a good thing.
That's good.
Next.
You gotta be bleeping me! Yes!
Speaking of the Jussie Smollett thing, the mayor will be in here later to yell about it. And we look forward to that. That'll be about 8:30. Chicago is also picking a Jeanine gang? I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
Jeanine. I thought that's what I heard.
Okay, but you're probably right. A Jeanine gang-led group is the architect of the O'Hare $8.5 billion expansion project. The mayor will talk about that as well when he's in here.
The mock-ups of those look incredible, of what they're going to do to O'Hare. It is like... It's crazy.
It's not going to just be pizza places and pastry places?
No, but it is an eating destination. If you're going to... They've made our
prom
airports.
Dates, first dates, what do you
think? Yes. Oh, that's I like that. Yeah. That's a good idea.
How about a prom date at the airport? Huh? Next.
You got to be bleeping me! Yes!
Back to Trump for a minute. He's still talking about overturning the Affordable Care Act. Every other Republican has got butt pucker on this and hoping he stops talking about it. And finally...
You got to be bleeping me!
High school senior Nicholas Baker said he's mulling several college options with plans to study political science and economics. Whether he goes to a Chicago area school or out of state all depends on the outcome of the election. Baker turned 18 last month, is on the ballot in his hometown of Palos Park, where he is challenging the incumbent mayor, John Mahoney, not that John Mahoney, a different John Mahoney, who's 56 years old. And if he's 18 and he's mayor, he's probably got to go to college in town.
Yeah, that's what he's going to do. And, you know, John Mahoney is... impressed by the young man, but doesn't think that he has enough life experience. But
tell that to Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, Nicholas says, I beg to differ. I've been volunteering for a long time, and I've been involved.
So we'll see.
Remember, we had a kid, from Bannockburn, who was running for school board a couple of years. But he was going to school in Champaign.
Yeah.
And then he was going to just go back and forth for the meetings.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe
he got that position.
He's on the board.
He commutes back for the meeting.
Nice commitment, by the way.
Yeah, but mayor, that's a stat. You know, that's one.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And the people of Palos Park are going to have to make a tough decision here. So, old guy, young guy, you decide.
Yeah.
By the way, the old guy is 2 years younger than me.
I was just about to say, Steve, throw that around that loosely.
6:20, Nick will join us in just a second. And again, a mayor later in studio and is as well on the show later. Anna DeVlanta is going to come by and hang out with us. That'll be good for property values. And Breakfast of the Blackhawk this morning includes Tony Esposito. Steve.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
He is Nick at night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
It's America's overnight sensation, Nick DiGiulio. Who's your new producer now?
That would be Tom Hush.
That's the big guy
fantastic.
In a hat.
Big guy in a hat, and you know it's amazing. The kid's only 25 years old. First of all, you know, he's got more energy because he's 25, and he still cares. That's the
right. He's not burned out and bitter.
He's only. You know what? I didn't know he was only 25, Nick. What makes that impressive is he knows every movie like Nick does. Like, he's done all the movies before he was born.
Oh, then he's the perfect date for Nick.
Yeah, they are.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we got along, you know, pretty famously immediately when we started talking movies. And he also...
Did you find him on Tinder?
Yeah, I did. I swiped on him. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And but he also, his favorite genre is horror. So immediately I was like, yeah, this guy's got the gig.
Did you call Dan Segrew and go, I never liked you anyway?
Absolutely. First thing I did.
Steve, the texter says that it's Genie Gang is the...
Genie Gang. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right. So what movie did you see last weekend with your mom and dad?
Us.
And?
Yeah, with my parents. Us.
And?
Oh, we all loved it. And, you know, my mom freaks out at horror movies in a big time, in a big way. And she was freaked out during the entire run. But when it was over, she looked at me and she goes, I really liked it.
Did you explain to her she didn't see any of it? That she had her hand over her eyes the entire time?
Well, you know, she was in the lobby for about an hour and a half.
I understand.
So, yeah. No, it's a great movie. It really is. And you know, Jordan Peele, he's no joke. He's the real deal.
Is he ever going to make a comedy again? I mean, he's ever going to do anything funny again? I mean, I know they've got some funny in the first two movies, but, I mean, funny.
I don't think so. I mean, I think this guy, because, I mean, his passion is horror movies, and it always has been. And, I mean, he's funny as hell, and, you know, like, Key and Peele, clearly one of the greatest sketch comedy shows in the history of anything. But his passion was horror movies. He grew up watching horror movies and that's what he wants to explore in his next movie. They've already been talking about, about what it's going to be. Next movie is going to be in the horror genre again. So, you know, I say, you know, that's great. And he's funny and he's already established that, but the guy's a great horror director. I mean, this Us is a fantastic horror movie. Like, top notch. It's beautifully directed. He directs the actors really well, and it's scary and original. He's the man. He's at this point, he's the man.
You know who my favorite horror directors are right now? And I'm not kidding. The people that direct CNN, because we get to see the horror 24 hours a day. The movie's coming out this weekend. Give me a preview here. Hotel Mumbai looks incredibly tense.
It's... from what I hear, it's a very unbelievably hard movie to watch. It's about the terror attacks in India, and it takes place. This one particularly takes place at the Taj Mahal Palace Hotel, where all the attacks are coming in and people were killed. And it's about a couple of people who work in the hotel, a chef and a kitchen worker, who try to protect the guests. And as they continue the assault, there's a couple that has to do whatever they can do to save their newborn baby. Dev Patel and Armie Hammer are in it. And everything I've heard of, one of my colleagues saw it at in Toronto and said it was just unbelievably and overwhelmingly intense. So you're gonna have to be in a specific mood to wanna check that one out.
The Beach Bum. What is that?
This is a movie about a character named Moondog. Mm-hmm. Who is a fun-loving, pot-smoking, beer-drinking rider, mm-hmm. who lives in Florida, and if he can only put down the drugs, he can write the next great American novel, and it's played by Matthew McConaughey.
No, oh, this is your movie, and is this loosely based on Buzz Kilman's life?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. So the cast is my main man, Matthew McConaughey. All right. Mm-hmm. Snoop Dogg, Zac Efron, Jonah Hill, Jimmy Buffett. Do you think there was pot smoked on the set?
Where's Willie? How come Willie's not in the movie?
Yeah, no, Will, I know. But they sing, actually, at one point in the movie, I think they sing a Willie Nelson song.
Oh, that's close.
That's covered. A
tribute.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a Matthew McConaughey movie for Nick, because, you know, he hasn't had one in a while. And yeah. Will you and Tom, your new producer, go see that together and not sit with the safety seat between the two of you?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. Actually, I'm seeing that with my parents this weekend.
Oh, okay.
And we're doing a double feature because we're going to do Dumbo, because I'm curious about it. I'm hearing really bad things about it, but Tim Burton's live-action remake of Dumbo, but it's got a great cast. You know, Colin Farrell, Eva Green, and then it's like a reunion of Danny DeVito, who played the Penguin, and Michael Keaton, who played Batman in Batman Returns. So it's like their first two movies, their first time together again since, you know, and directed by Tim Burton.
Batman turns 80 Sunday?
Batman, the character?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I totally forgot about that.
Actually,
yeah, that's right.
Saturday is Batman's 80th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's looked better.
His hearing is a little off now. The commissioner's on the the commissioner.
You know, he doesn't drive as fast either in the
right.
Batmobile.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
you know, careful.
And he can't see the signal, so he shows up late all the time.
And he tells the same crime fighting stories over and over again. The man who knew too much is Nick's next film club film screening, and that'll be on April 9th at the AMC Rosemont 18. It's going to come up faster than you think, so get your tickets now. And how do we do that?
AMCtheaters.com. Go to the seating chart. Pick out your tickets. They'll be waiting for you Tuesday, April 9th. Starts at 8. I'll introduce it. Have some dinner beforehand at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. We're in partnership with those guys now. They've been doing a great job. And if you go in, say, hey, I'm a member of the film club. I'm going to see Man Who Knew Too Much. You get 15% off all your food.
Yeah, nice deal.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Go to bed.
You got it.
It's Nick DiGilio, 6:32. And your headlines in a moment at 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
You know, it's funny when you book somebody on this show, you can get the biggest stars and they couldn't be cooler. And then you get somebody who, not so big a star, it's got an attitude or an ego problem. And then you get somebody that used to be a star that just goes, seriously? And Samberg just reminded me of one of those. Batman's 80th birthday is Saturday. Adam West is fine. What?
Well, he's no longer with us.
He's always been fine.
Oh,
he's tougher. He's tougher to book now. I will grant you that. Robin was played by a guy named, help me out,
Burt Ward.
So Burt Ward, this is going to be 2-3 years ago now. Burt Ward was booked on this show.
Oh, man, I remember this.
And Burt Ward was booked on this show to talk about some dog thing he was doing.
He and his wife own kennels.
It's like a rescue thing, wasn't
it?
Yeah.
So I don't want to digress too far, but occasionally you'll run into somebody who's famous for one thing, and they don't want to talk about that one thing. Mm-hmm. So Burt Ward wanted to talk about the dogs, not about being Robin.
Well, and Steve, he was booked, but then we had promoted it all morning, and then Burt Ward canceled on us because there was a disaster, a dog kennel disaster, and then we booked him again because I was like...
Well, I was just fascinated that Burt Ward was canceling on any publicity whatsoever.
Yes.
So then he came on, mm-hmm. and he didn't want to talk about being Robin. He wanted to talk about his stupid dog thing.
Only dogs.
I wouldn't let him, and the thing got really kind of awkward.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been back on since for obvious reasons. But
didn't a dog answer when we called? Like
the dogs are barking like crazy. Yeah. I mean, it was a bit of a circus. It was
you know, it was almost like a tell me what was it like with Adam West in those outfits? Boy, I bet you had a lot of laughs. Yeah. So anyway, we got dogs.
You know who I had that happen with? Mickey Dolenz. I was on a sports show to talk about polo. He was involved
in polo. He was a big polo guy. Yeah.
So
he didn't want to
talk about the monkeys, right? He would not talk about the monkeys. I'm here to talk about polo.
You know, it's funny because I had great experiences with Mickey Dolenz, who was just a goofball. So he was the same kind of jerk. I had David Cassidy do that to me. David Cassidy,
isn't he one of your friends?
No, and he's also dead.
These are all my like heartthrobs.
David Cassidy came at one point. He was doing the Pirates of Penzance on Broadway. So fine, he's doing the Pirates of Penzance. Good for you. And he comes in, and his handler came in first, which is always a weird vibe. Mm-hmm. And his handler came in first, which is a signal for you young people about to get a show that the talent, the star, the whatever is going to be a problem. So the handler comes in and goes, hey, do me a favor and kind of stay off the Partridge Family stuff. And I said, are you kidding me? He goes, no, David really doesn't want to talk about that. And I said, then David's not on the show because nobody cares about the Pirates of Penzance piece unless we talk about the Partridge Family.
Right.
So he apparently pouted in the hallway a little bit and he came in. It was okay. And then the flip side of that is you get a guy like Robert Goulet. Also dead, by the way. Robert Goulet.
In this segment of Steve has interviewed.
So now we can talk about him. It's okay.
But I would have talked about him anyway. But Robert Goulet was famous for a show called Cabaret, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Robert Goulet came.
Camelot.
Was it Camelot?
One of those.
Was it Cabaret? I don't know. Some damn Broadway show.
Or was it Dr. Zhivago? Who knows?
So Robert Goulet, famous for Airplane, as far as I'm concerned. So Robert Goulet comes in, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning. He's drunk. And he proceeds to tell me his nutrition fitness.
It's Camelot.
Camelot?
Yes.
I knew it started with a C. His fitness and nutrition regime, which is he eats dinner at 2 and doesn't eat anything after that.
Oh.
And then he goes, and you ought to try it.
Oh.
And ironically, years later, I'm almost on the same program, even though he and I almost came to blows.
Over that comment?
Not over that comment. He was just a jerk.
Okay.
And I called him a jerk on the air. I go, do you have any interest in promoting? And I was laughing. I go, do you have any interest in promoting the fact that you're here doing this show? Because you're really kind of a jerk. And to his credit, he wouldn't back down. So it turned out to be some good tense radio for a little bit. And then we do these things called drops, where back in the day they were more popular, but you would... you have a star say, this is Robert Goulet, whenever I'm in Chicago or wherever, I listen to the Steve Cochran Show. And he said, God, I'd love to find this tape. Hi, this is Robert Goulet, whenever I'm in... this is Robert Goulet. Don't listen to Steve. He's fat and he's losing his hair.
No.
So,
you've got to find that.
I was working the morning where Kathy and Judy kicked him out of the studio for this kind of the same thing.
Being a jerk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was an angry alcoholic. And,
so if he said he didn't eat after 2, did he just drink the rest
apparently,
of the day?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's too bad. Because he was good in Airplane.
You know, the compassionate part of me thinks, you know, if you're one of these actors that has done something that's, like, stereotyped you for life, I could see why they wouldn't want to talk about that, that they'd want to break from it. And who knows, maybe there's some sort of PTSD involved.
Well, there may be, but then don't ask to come on the show.
Right, that's
you know
true.
What I mean? Yeah.
And I think you know the... a rule of thumb, once you tell any host, hey, don't touch on this, it's the
please.
Only thing they want to touch
on. Come on. I mean, I'm 12.
Yeah.
You know, tell me to not do something. But if you're decent about it, like if you come in and you go, listen, I talk about this nonstop. I'm sure you're different. But I just don't want to answer all the cliched questions. I know that sounds jerky, but you know, I hope you understand. I would approach it completely differently. But nobody gets to come in and say, do this, don't do that. Say, it's my house. Get out. You know who was a huge jerk? This is funny. The guy that did the voice for Roger Rabbit. Charles... Yeah, guys, look this up for me. Who's the guy that this will tell you everything you need to know about the story, because nobody knows this guy. But in 90, 91, 92, somewhere in there, he was still fairly famous. And he was a comedian, first and foremost, a stand-up. And when I first started doing stand-up in the 80s, Charles Fleischer.
Sure, yeah.
So when I first started doing stand-up in the 80s, I was on a bill with him, and I was bad. and I blew up the room, which is just, it's a comedian's term for, you know, your bad opening to the middle or the headlining act. And he took me outside the club, literally outside the club onto the sidewalk, and just ripped me a new one. And by the way, I deserved it at that point. Didn't feel good at the time, mm-hmm. but he was right about what he said. So fast forward, it's 90, 91, 92, whatever. And I think I was in Minneapolis. And he comes in, and he does the, I don't want to talk about Roger Rabbit. And I literally looked at him and said, nobody knows you. I said, do you understand? No one knows you. I said, your mom and dad don't know you except for Roger Rabbit. So I said, if you want to talk about Roger Rabbit, I'll talk about anything else you want to talk about as well. Otherwise, get out. It's just not that hard. And then a guy like Tom Hanks comes in. He'll do anything you want. He's the coolest guy on the planet.
Talk about bosom buddies.
He'll talk about bosom buddies. Give me a hug about bosom buddies. Because nobody asks about bosom buddies. He gave me a hug. So Tom Hanks could be the coolest guy in the world. Meryl Streep was great. Meryl Streep told me to F off and laughed about it. She was great. So, you know, the biggest stars sometimes can be the coolest people. But sometimes the most difficult people to deal with are the people that were super famous for one thing and just don't want to talk about it. Eve Plum broke my heart. Jan Brady?
Oh, my gosh.
Marcia.
Yeah, I had a crush on Jan Brady when I was a little kid. Not Marcia. Jan. Years later, I meet Jan. Could not be a bigger pain.
Really?
Oh, completely.
That middle child syndrome?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I said, look, Eve, Jan, whatever you are, that's over between us. And I said, I'm moving on to, what would it have been then? Somebody from the Facts of Life. Nancy McKeon. It's 6:51.
Isn't that great? We got on this because it's Batman's birthday.
Yeah, this is all a tribute to Batman. See, on his 80th birthday.
I thought you were going to tell us that the guest canceled for this segment or something. Is no?
No, I had all four right. other things okay. planned for all the right. segment, okay. and I didn't get to any of them.
All right.
Tribute where we don't talk about Batman continues. Who's your favorite Batman bad guy?
The Joker, Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero is great. You know, the only other Joker that I could really get behind, and I include Heath Ledger in this, because Heath Ledger was his own Joker. It wasn't even really a Joker. It was Heath Ledger, because it was such a freak show.
Joker.
He was so good at being a freak. He was tremendous. But Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Was yeah. tremendous.
You know who we're forgetting?
Who's that?
Frank Gorshin is the Riddler. Now, on the very first episode of the TV show, I believe.
Oh, see, when I think of the Riddler, I think of John DeCoss.
Well, of
John
course.
John DeCoss is but really
I,
the Riddler.
I think Frank laid the groundwork. That was, I think I told you the story the other day.
What's his name, Some, Dave?
Frank Gorshin. Some neighbors, I think Batman went on 65 and 66, mm-hmm. And some neighbors had the only color TV on our block. I would go down there, and it was two nights. It was on consecutive nights each week.
Yes, I'd forgotten that because I was just a little kid then, Dave.
Well, so was I. But I would go down to our neighbors, and so I could watch the show in color. Because, I mean, that was a big deal then.
Yeah, because we all had black and white TVs.
Yeah.
I got my first color TV in 2017.
Can I tell you, I've got some facts about Frank Gorshin
yeah, yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
you don't know. He followed the Beatles on Ed Sullivan on that February 9th, 1964.
He was the act to follow the Beatles?
Yeah. Oh,
who would want that?
How terrible is that?
The night the Beatles and Davy Jones debuted, then he was... He was nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah, he was a comedian, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he do stand-up?
Yeah.
The Riddler's laugh was his own. It was actually his laugh.
He invented it?
Yeah.
He was an impressionist, I believe.
That's it. Yep, oh, you're exactly right.
He reprised the role in 1970, in case you were wondering.
I just wonder, when Abigail Grace is three and a half, and what's going to be her thing, right? What's going to be her show? You know, like when Abigail Grace is doing a talk show on whatever the version of talk shows are in 30 years.
The telepathic show?
Yeah, the one where everyone has a chip in their brain and you just think about what show you want to hear. What show is she going to look back on?
Well,
Very Cavallari? Is that going to be her show? I mean,
I think the girl we talked to yesterday, JoJo Siwa, that'll be, that'll have a memory for
her. Kids TV has gotten better in the last I don't know how many years. I mean, the classics are still good, but cartoons are just crap now. Cartoons from the 60s and 70s were tremendous. Cartoons now just suck. I mean, when a Cartoon Network came out, I thought, I can't wait to watch the Cartoon Network.
Racer, man. That was the best. That carnage.
How could you beat the production values of Clutch Cargo?
Well, there's that. I was more of a Bugs Bunny man. Oh, by the way, one last thing in this very important half hour of radio. Did anybody watch the mayoral debate last night?
Yes.
What was going on with Channel 2's production values? The studio looked terrible. Lighting was terrible. Camera angles were terrible.
It was like it was everyone's first run.
It looked like a... Remember cable access television?
Yes.
It looked like a cable access production. Like they spent $8 putting it together. It looked like all the union camera people quit and didn't come in that day.
I know. It was like they had no notice that there was going to be a debate.
Oh, there's a debate?
Right. We better get something together.
The only studio we have is this broom closet over here. Let's go over here. I don't know what Channel 2 was doing. It was horrible.
Yeah, the camera angles, though, that you mentioned, that was they were very... it was not professionals that ran that.
Well, it was bizarre. It's like the front row, they were shooting down on the people in the front row, and they were asking the question. I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah. And the thing about these debates is they don't say anything different.
No.
It's like, I've now watched three, and I'm tired of it.
Eric's on the phone from Country Club Hills. Eric?
Good morning. I know this is going to sound kind of strange, but whenever I would watch Batman, I'd have to keep a dictionary nearby because the vocabulary used would always make me kind of wonder what a certain word meant.
How old were you then? That's a pretty smart thing to do.
I'm 55. But
oh, yeah, you're right in the zone then.
Yeah, I'm in the zone. So, I remember there was one episode where Batman and Robin were fighting. It may have even been the Batman movie from 1966, and they used the term malevolent malefactor. And he's like, you malevolent malefactors? And I'm thinking, okay, I've got to look that up. So
well, opposite
of benevolent.
Yeah, benevolent malevolent.
Right. So at any rate.
But you were the smart little nerd kid. Did you get A's all the time?
No, not exactly.
What'd you grow up to be?
An undertaker.
Is that right?
Yes, very true.
Well, that's not an easy job. That's a very difficult job.
It's kind of a flunk-out doctor type of job.
Yeah, exactly. But every undertaker I've ever known are some of the funniest people ever.
Yeah, I do stand-up.
Well, you guys have to be funny.
My clients do lay down.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Right there. Hold the line. Give that guy something.
That's like the original version of Googling, you know, sitting next to the...
Yeah,
dictionary.
With a dictionary.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give him...
You know what I did while he was looking up tough dictionary words? I had a dictionary, too. I was looking up dirty words. I was trying to find any of the dirty words I knew in the dictionary.
I'm going to give him a MyPillow guarantee, the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Order yours at MyPillow.com and use promo code WGN. Since undertaking, he probably needs a comfortable pillow.
Exactly, right? Don't give it to any of your clients.
Yeah.
It's 7:02. We'll come back in just a moment in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.
Hey, Maze! What's up, bro?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
Let's go, 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 White Sox! We're with you all away.
I got to give Michael Heidemann credit before we get to Andy Major here. Michael Heidemann is a new member of the team here. Michael, come here. Michael Heidemann is part of the broadcast. Now, jump on that mic. Michael, I told Michael in the hallway, I said, I got to get a Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi or something because, you know, I don't drink coffee.
Right.
And I said, we got a bunch of live guests coming in this morning. Run down to Dunkin' Donuts, you know, grab some bagels, grab some donuts, whatever, for these people that come in. He's off like a shot. Bang! Normally, I'd have to ask four times, and then they go, oh, yeah, he didn't forget. Then they go, but I didn't even give you any money. You got to have money.
Oh, well, I wanted to be on the ball. I mean, we were talking about superheroes, and
yeah, I was very impressed.
Go out and get it.
He is very opposite of Pete, who Pete was formerly on the show. That's with Justin now doing Extension 720, because Pete, his reaction time, there's a delay. You will say, Pete, can you come in the studio? And then there's a good
saunter.
90 seconds where he, you're like, did
but
you
But Pete was always,
me?
Did he really mean it, right?
Right.
Like, you'd have to ask a second time, because why would you want me on here? Like,
yeah, he doesn't.
And Pete's a runner, too. You think he would have sprinted.
I know, but anyway, Michael, very impressive.
Yeah, well, Michael thanks. Is like, off, all right, I got to call him.
So here, would you give Michael this $40 and
wow.
That note?
Wow.
And
just so you know, a lot of times
keep the change.
This is a funny list.
Yeah, and Dave would like some coffee.
Could I add
and
something?
If any of the listeners want coffee, Joe, whatever you want. Steve, Mary, you know, Michael. Michael's going to go down
Michael
three more
times. Back by noon.
Is there a specific coffee you want, Dave?
Do we have time to do this over here?
Do it off the air. Yeah,
let's go. It's a list. It's a very long.
And don't forget the Vandeveld Grzanich stop in the newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody else in the newsroom, too. I feel bad for buying drinks for just half the bar.
Now, Pam Jones is here, too. She'll want something as well.
Yeah, okay. We'll always take care of Pam.
Maybe she can have one.
She can have mine. I don't drink coffee.
She can have one of the 25 munchkins that you've requested. Yeah. 25, and I find that to be a funny number.
I think that's what they sell them at, isn't that?
Oh, I thought they didn't buy the dozen.
I don't know, to be honest with you.
Mix those up. Throw some chocolate munchkins in there as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was my some of you may not know that was my stripper name, Chocolate Munchkin. Andy Mazur joins us. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Extra large cream and sugar, please.
You got it.
This show's been very odd since about 6:30. Anyway, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the start of another long baseball season.
Yeah, welcome back. And we've got weather in Kansas City today. What do we know about that?
Yeah, I was. We're talking a little bit yesterday about the fact that it's going to be warm, but there's a 10% chance that it's not going to rain in Kansas City today.
So really, 90%. So is this an early rain out, or would they just take it up since it's opening day as far as they can?
Yeah, they probably would take it as long as they could, especially if they thought that there's a term in baseball that you kind of get sick of when you're in the press box and it's raining outside, the tarp's on the field. Mm-hmm. We have a window coming up at about a certain time, and if they think they have a chance to play it, they will. So that's let's just hope that it doesn't start that way, because these guys are ready to go, and they've been ready to go, I think, for a little bit longer than a week, because you get to that point in spring training, you're like, all right, we're sick of seeing these same teams all the time. Let's go ahead and let's make these count.
Royals going to be any good this year?
You know, probably not. I still think that with Kansas City and Detroit, especially those two teams are earlier in their rebuilds than I think the White Sox are at this point. The one team that might surprise is the Twins. They seem to have a pretty decent roster going in, and still Cleveland, even though they lost a couple of guys, more than a couple of guys actually, probably still the class of the division. I think the White Sox have a good chance of finishing third this year.
In the meantime, the Royals were World Series champs not that long ago. What the hell happened?
Well, they decided they were going to kind of break it up and go for a younger roster and try to do it that way again. And they did trade away some of their young players that were due paychecks, especially with they didn't trade away Eric Hosmer, but he decided to leave free agency. And Mike Moustakas was traded. Alex Gordon's still around, but I mean, it's just more of a.
They basically pulled a full Florida Marlin. The Miami / Florida Marlins won two World Series in 6 or 7 years and continued to break up the team. They were like, "We won a World Series. Well, this can't happen again. Break up the team." And they did it multiple times.
Yeah.
All right. So the White Sox, we've gone over high points of the White Sox quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Ed Farmer will be on later. You've already kind of laid out the rest of the division, but let's do a little baseball preview here. Best division in baseball still the AL East?
Yeah, I think it might be, because you look at what the Tampa Rays were able to do last year. They won 90 games. They were messing around with full-time guys starting games, and you had a bunch of guys that you didn't know who they were. And, now they have former White Sox Avi Garcia over there, and they have the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the American League, and Blake Snell. It's a pretty good little roster over there, but still, Yankees and Red Sox, it's going to be very hard to unseat those two teams. Toronto kind of up the pack a little bit, and Baltimore is in full rebuild as well. They're calling them the baby birds out there right now.
You won 100 games, Dave Ennett. You ought to be automatically in the playoffs. You won 100 games and you finish second, or somehow you miss a wild card because four teams, I don't know, 100 games you ought to be in.
But they got in. They got in with 100 wins last year. I think maybe honorable mention, if not the best team, is the National League Central in terms of the best division.
You don't want to talk about the Baltimore Orioles?
No, I mean, I think Baltimore, they are in full rebuild.
Right.
And I think you look at the NL Central, where Yeah, maybe the Reds are rebuilding, but they look a little better than a lot of teams that are going through that right now.
And Cardinals, I think, look like they're going to be much
Cardinals
better.
Look a lot better. Mm-hmm. The Brewers, we know where they are. We know where the Cubs are, 95-win team. So I think you look top to bottom in that division. And that's I put them right up there with the AL East.
Yeah,
but they don't have the World Series champ in that division from last year.
Right.
Yeah, that's a tough division, too, because, as Dave points out, you know, Cincinnati got a little stronger offensively when they acquired Yasiel Puig, and they've got Matt Kemp. But still, the big question with the Reds has always been pitching, especially in that ballpark. But they're definitely an improved team. Cardinals get Paul Goldschmidt. They're definitely improved as well. Cubs are the Cubs at this point. I think Pittsburgh's the only team in that division that doesn't really have a chance. But I still think the Cubs might win that division this year. I think that their pitching depth is now a little bit stronger on the rotation, especially if you Darvish is healthy for the entire year.
SI's description of the Pirates is great. They're baseball's version of beige wallpaper. The NL East, it's the Nationals or the Braves?
Yeah, I think the Phillies are probably going to be the team in that division. You know, they got
they get anybody in the offseason?
No, sorry.
This 13-year deal guy, $330 million.
Bob Harper.
Yeah.
And then the AL West, I just don't pay much attention until the end of the season, but that could be pretty competitive, right?
Yeah, I think Houston's probably still the class of that division. Seattle's a much improved team, and the Angels, of course, you have Mike Trout, so anything is possible with them as well, but I still think Houston will win that
division. Yeah, don't overlook the Oakland Athletics either. They were a winning team last year, and they made a deal last night to get Kendrys Morales from Toronto. And, they always seem to be one of those teams that they're not on anyone's radar, but they find a way to sneak in there, and they're always in the picture.
So what we're saying here is a White Sox-Cubs World Series?
I think without a doubt, yeah, of course. Okay. I think I'll buy the tickets right now.
All right, we're going to hear a lot more of Andy Mazur on the broadcast this year. We're excited about that. Now, what will your role be today during a rainout? Will you sing, dance?
I'm thinking about doing a combination. I mean, the dancing part is a little tough to translate on radio, mm-hmm. but the singing part, I think, would go pretty well. I think I might try to sing, like, White Sox theme songs from 1930 all the way through to today.
Okay, so you and Ed and DJ will somehow keep us entertained while we figure out whether or not the game's going to be played.
So let's hope it's not going to rain, because I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Yeah, well, 90% chance of rain. I think that's not a great shot of getting your wish there. But we'll see. We'll see. All right, Andy, looking forward to it.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Andy Mazur.
By the way, the forecast, not much better for tomorrow in Kansas City. Tomorrow would be the makeup day.
Wait, you know what you say about Friday, then let's play three.
Of course.
Yeah. Got to catch up sometime. We'll come back with your MVPP, your most valuable person on the planet, after this.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Pat Brady will join us by phone here in a little bit, talking politics. In the meantime, our friend Eric Edelstein's here, and we'll get to our most valuable person on the planet in a second. Eric, I'd like you to jump in on this, because as you know, right now in Addison, Illinois, little boys and little girls are waking up thinking, when can I be in the Iditarod? Just like our most valuable person on the planet, Charlie Baena. Charlie Baena joins us now, who's an amazing story. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
How's a nice boy from Addison ever even get interested in the Iditarod?
Pretty much followed it, when I was younger, through the newspaper, pretty much before we had internet.
Yeah.
And I came up to Alaska in 2006 to see it in person, and felt that I possibly could do something like this, and here I am.
But having said that, you had one big speed bump, right?
A little bit. Yep, a little bit of a speed bump.
Type 1 diabetic. Now, here's why being a type 1 diabetic is a problem in the Iditarod. It's you and the dogs. And the dogs have limited medical training. So when you're out in the middle of the forest in this incredibly demanding competition, how do you stay safe?
I pretty much just rely on myself, and that makes me take care of my diabetes pretty much a lot better than probably than I could any other way, just because the dogs need me and I need the dogs, and we work together, and this way we stay safe to you know, make the 1,000-mile journey to Nome.
Now, Charlie, with a lot of diabetics, you can do everything right. You can plan your meals, your snacks, you can do your insulin, everything, and still sometimes your body doesn't react the way you want it. How do you plan for that while you're on a race?
Pretty much like you said, I mean, we try to pretty much do everything normal, like I always do. I do have, you know, obviously some good days and bad days, and we just pretty much stay positive and, you know, pack the right meals, pack the right amount of insulin that I need. I have a backup plan in case my insulin pump fails. Plenty of backup meters out there for myself, and we just stay positive. And everything worked out well. This was my fifth Iditarod, and we're really happy to say we finished 24th this year.
Nice.
Congratulations.
It's a big deal. By the way, how close is medical help if it's needed?
Depends which village that you come into. I try not to rely on everybody because obviously the resources are not out there. It's not like there's a Walgreens or whatnot on the corner or anything like that. So we make sure that we have everything packed out there, you know, in the various checkpoints, and I carry enough in my sled, you know, for myself in case there is an emergency.
What's the coolest thing you've seen in the Iditarod when you weren't hallucinating?
I'd say the Northern Lights, which is really nice because you could be out there, obviously, in the middle of nowhere. It could be, you know, 20 below zero, and you're going along the trail with your dogs, and all of a sudden you see all the greens and
got to be amazing.
You know, maybe a little bit of pinks and stuff like that, and it's just like this is what it's about.
Charlie,
you know, seeing stuff that the normal person can't see.
Do you go up there? These dogs, are they with you year round, or do you meet them when you get up there and someone else has trained them?
I do all the training myself. I have 30 dogs in my kennel here, and I usually come up in October from Illinois, and then I start training, and then I will be back in Illinois here in about a couple weeks to start work back up.
The bears that hang out and like to eat you, is that ever an issue, or they stay off the path?
Not at all. All the bears are hibernating and everything like that, so everything is pretty safe for us. We might run into some moose here or there, or maybe some arctic fox or wolves or whatnot. So, but I mean,
wait. Wolves or whatnot? Wolves are a big deal.
Yeah, there are. You'll see them in the distance, but nothing that's really going to scare us or anything like that. So when you're out there with 14 dogs, they, you know, see that they have a little bit of competition. So
now this is the big race, everybody pays attention to when you say, mushers. Is there a tour? Can you make money in this sport?
I would say not. It costs a lot of money every year to, you know, vaccine the dogs, train the dogs, feed the dogs, enter these races and everything. So it's basically just for fun. For me, it is. Your people that are like top five, they have a lot more dogs and they're a lot more competitive. And even though you're not really profiting on it, so we basically just work on sponsorship and a lot of hard work to be able to afford to do this year after year.
And when you're not mushing, you have a landscape company, correct?
Correct. I have a landscape company that is going on almost 30 years there in Addison. So we work a lot, throughout the summer, so we can afford to do this.
Charlie's Landscaping. Please hire Charlie in and around the Addison area and help him, support his life and his very cool, fun thing he does where he goes 1,000 miles through the Alaskan wilderness.
Yeah.
It's an amazing story, Charlie, and you're a good inspiration, great inspiration for anybody dealing with type 1. So thanks for coming on. You're the most valuable person on the planet.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the interview, Steve.
All right, you hold on. We're going to get him. What are we going to give him?
We're gonna
donuts?
We're going to give him an app gift card. I don't want to mess with his diet. So.
Yeah, exactly. Eric, when we come back, the mayor's race, the Mueller report, and the Jussie Smollett bizarre whatever.
Do we have like 6-7 hours?
Yeah, we'll be on until 5 this afternoon.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, all coming up.
Listen to Adelstein and Brady.
Eric Adelstein, Pat Brady. I know he's been enjoying his theme song. He really hasn't done any work in the last week. He's just played it over and over again. Called people and said, hey, have you heard my theme song? That's pretty much how it's gone, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Basking in the glory.
What's the name of your company?
AL Media.
All right, so got to ask you about the mayor's race.
Yeah.
If we believe the polls, it's a blowout.
Right.
Surprised?
I think I was a little surprised right after the primary, but it just seemed like the concrete hardened or the cake was baked, whatever metaphor cliche.
Sure, they're all good.
It seemed like it was done after the runoff. I mean, after the initial round, that the city had just kind of made up his mind. Now, I typically think these things end up being somewhat closer, but I think Lightfoot's a huge favorite going into
Tuesday.
What's
a low turnout do?
You know, I think conventional wisdom says that helps Preckwinkle, but I think Preckwinkle's got too big a hill to climb, and I think, you know, unless something shocking happens, we're going to have Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
Pat Brady joins us from the road. He's in Springfield this morning. Hey, Pat, is this a terrible campaign by Preckwinkle, or just Lightfoot's on a run that nobody saw coming?
I think people want change. I don't think the Preckwinkle campaign helped itself, and I'm kind of interested in Eric's take on Preckwinkle went negative right away, and negative, let's face it, it worked, and man, it backfired. So, but I think the city's ready for a change, and Lurie had a good message and delivered it well.
Yeah, I think, you know, Preck, this was from the beginning of this campaign, this was Preckwinkle's to lose, and she's done everything she could to lose it. Now, that's not to take anything away from Lightfoot. Lightfoot took advantage of her opportunities. She got some breaks, but she was in the right position to do it, and I think Pat's absolutely right. Sometimes we make these things more complicated. This city, in the wake of the Burke corruption indictments and all that, they want change. And, you know, Lori is more changed, really, than any of those other candidates running.
I get the change part, but I also think that we so want change in every aspect of politics, and frankly, need it in most areas, that experience has become the enemy.
Yes.
Experience is not a bad thing in any job.
Right.
If you have experience, you allegedly should be better at the job. Can Lightfoot run a company this big?
Well, she's had huge jobs in the past, both in the public and private sector. We don't know. I mean, you know, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, and their new coach, they said, are you ready to be coach of the Cleveland Browns? And he said, are you ready to be a parent? I don't know.
Right.
Like, no one's ready till you get into those big jobs. Right.
Right.
And
right.
I think we'll see how Lightfoot is. I'm not sure anyone is ever prepared to be mayor of Chicago. But, you know, to your point on experience being a negative, it really goes back to 1976 and Jimmy Carter. And ever since Nixon and Watergate, the best political message has been throw out the bums and let's have a change election. And, you know, maybe that's been to the detriment to some extent.
But I think in certain cases, certainly.
But I think in this situation, I think it's healthy. I think this city needs a fresh face. I think we need something different, and we'll see how she does.
Pat, I don't know if you saw the debate yesterday on Channel 2. Aside from the horrible production values and hideous camera angles and bad lighting, there was a point at the end of the debate where the candidates were asked to ask each other a question. And Tony Preckwinkle literally went with the "when did you stop beating your wife" question. She looked at Lori Lightfoot and said, you've done this poorly, you've done that poorly. What's your biggest disappointment in your career? The whole thing about her going negative, she's got a general perception of being negative.
Sour.
So how does someone who's negative go negative?
Well, so she's down, if you believe some of the polls, 35 points. So it clearly hasn't worked. She did the same thing early on, too, and she had kind of a dog whistle gay question, knowing that that might help her politically. I agree with Eric. Her campaign, she's done everything she can to lose. I mean, she's chairman of the Democratic Party, and she's going to lose to someone that's never run for public office before.
It's pretty crazy.
That says a lot about her
pretty
campaign.
Pretty crazy. The Mueller report is something we need to spend a couple of minutes on. So let me bring up Smollett first, because there's no way to explain this. This is stupid, looking in a mirror, seeing more stupid, and getting another mirror. I don't get it. I don't understand the motivation. I don't understand how it was done, why it was done. Can either one of you explain this to me?
I'll defer to Pat. I'll be quick because Pat's more an expert on this stuff. I talked to a few reporters yesterday because I was scratching my head and I said, could you explain this to me? And every one of them said, no, I don't understand it.
No, I
don't understand. I mean, to me, I think it goes to sort of incompetence, and this thing was botched. I'm not sure there's some great conspiracy, but this was horribly handled, just horribly handled.
Patrick?
I completely agree. And Eric talked to reporters. I talked to every one of my prosecutor friends. And for the life of us, have never seen anything like this. She dismissed the case. You don't dismiss the case at grand jury. You get a plea, you get an admission of guilt, and then you get a term of supervision or whatever. And she continues, Kim Fox, to dig this hole.
trying to explain it. She can't explain it because this is so far out of the ordinary for anybody that's ever had that job. And that job, being the prosecutor, whether federal or state, you have such a public trust. You are in charge of handing out justice. And she so abused it in this case that she's never going to recover from this. This is as bad as I've ever seen it. I agree with Eric. I don't know what the grand conspiracy is here. It might just be stupidity or incompetence, but man, is this bad.
I mean, I get the idea that, oh, we dismiss disorderly conduct, you know, situations all the time. But as Pat said, then get a plea. If the guy did it and you have the evidence, make him plea out and make him admit to some culpability. Yeah, I'm not saying the guy has to go to prison, but I mean, you know, come on.
And how about pick up the phone and you call the mayor's office and you call the police superintendent and go, you guys aren't going to like this.
Right.
But I'm making this decision and here's why I'm making this decision. As opposed to going, you know, if we don't tell mom who broke the lamp, maybe she won't notice.
Right. We'll just sweep it under the rug.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but disorderly conduct, too. I mean, that's like me getting in a fight outside Wrigley Field or something. They throw you in, they charge you with disorderly conduct. What this guy did, and the state's attorney still stands by it, playing the homophobic stuff, the race stuff, this was a really, really bad conduct. Disorderly conduct's kind of the only charge that fits. I think the guy should have gone to jail for it. The damage he did, the abuse of the system, the damage he's done to Chicago police, the damage he's done to the city. And what she did, she's so incompetent by letting him get this Nolly Price deal. He walked out immediately and professed his innocence.
And still continues to trash the Chicago Police Department.
Yeah. We got to give the CPD a break. These guys, men and women, are out there working for us every day, and they've had a rough couple of years. This is one case we got to stand up for them. I couldn't be happier to see what the mayor did 2 days ago. I've never seen him go nuts like that. Maybe Eric has.
He was worked up.
And he'll be here in 40 minutes to reiterate the point. He'll be live in studio in a little bit. All right, Pat, you got a minute to hang with us? You got to go do your hearing.
Absolutely, yeah. Sure.
All right, stand by. Let's go live now to Pat Brady in Springfield and Eric Edelstein 8 feet from me. All right, so the Mueller report, this is another thing that's kind of very difficult to explain. But my understanding, Pat, is that the Mueller report, at its bare minimum, required a decision to be made on obstruction, not to be punted to the AG. What have I got wrong there?
It was within his discretion to punt it, and I think, listening to the last 4 or 5 days since it came up, he probably did the right thing. If you're going to make a decision to indict the sitting president of the United States, that's a decision probably better made by the sitting attorney general than an independent counsel. Remember, Mueller works. This is not like the special counsel like Ken Starr. He works, actually, within the realm of the Justice Department. So I think he did the right thing.
I just don't understand, Pat, how after a year and a half, in 48 hours, they digest that report, do a legal analysis, and say, we've made the determination that there's no obstruction. I mean, that's just kind of silly, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I took some law school finals and only studied for a half hour, so I don't know.
Well, here's the back end of that, because if you say I can make a decision in 2 days that there's no obstruction, then why is it taking 6 weeks or 2 months to get the full report out?
Exactly. Exactly.
And because there's grand jury information, and there's national security information in there, and there's arguably executive privilege information. There's a lot of protected information within that report. And back to Eric's point, I'll kidding aside, on a case of obstruction of justice, I think you actually could make that determination fairly quickly. It's not that complicated. I think you could. Listen, there are questions, too, with Barr and the memo that he wrote a year or so ago saying you couldn't charge a president with obstruction. I don't agree with it. So there are a lot of questions there, and Barr's going to be on the hot seat. He's going to have to go to Congress and answer all those questions.
All right, last thing. We all saw the president sit down with Lester Holt, look Lester Holt in the eye, and on national television say, look, I was going to fire Comey regardless of what Rosenstein said because I can do it and because this whole Russia thing needed to go away. How is that not obstruction of justice?
I said at the time I thought it was, but when you're a prosecutor, as I said before, you have a lot of discretion, and part of that discretion is evaluating all the facts, whether you can get a conviction at trial, in addition to the evidence. And you got a sitting president of the United States who arguably could have believed he had authority to do it, because he did have authority to fire Comey, but he had to do it with a corrupt intent. Probably the tipping point was they didn't think they had enough evidence to prove corrupt intent. That being said, I want to wait and see what this report says. because he put specific language in the report and in the Barr letter that said this certainly doesn't exonerate him for obstruction.
Yeah, there's no exoneration.
No.
No, not at all.
Only what Barr wanted to say. And I do think here's the problem with today's fast news cycle is the fact that the first impression becomes the hardened impression. Yeah. And they did a great job of spinning this very quickly how they wanted. We don't know the context of what Mueller said. We don't know the context of how this was written. And I think that's why Democrats and a lot of Republicans are saying release as much of the report as you can.
We live in a retraction generation now where the retraction never gets the same amount of attention. And it's a problem. It's Eric Edelstein. It's Pat Brady. Pat, go do your hearing. And next week when you guys come in, I hope there's nothing going on because I'm tired.
I think, yes.
Yes, yes. So I look forward to it.
Hey, Steve, Eric and I, for the first and only time, are supporting the same candidate. So I hope I don't get too emotional next week. No. You know, I don't think we've ever done that.
Oh, when we mentioned Mayor Lightfoot is one. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
That's why we have elections.
We'll always have Lori, Eric. We'll always have Lori.
That's a good one.
Thank you, Pat. Eric, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than one night show. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me, kiss me.
Dean Richards live at Channel 9 as we bring you another action-packed edition of
Moron Entertainment.
Moron Entertainment.
We need a jingle. Don't we need a flashy jingle?
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. John DeCoste. John DeCoste may have already finished it. He'll be in tomorrow, so we'll ask him.
More than the greatest love.
And it's an acronym, so we have to come up with something for M-O-R-O-N. More on Entertainment, sponsored by, well, we don't have a sponsor either. We'll need that as well. What'd Charles Barkley say about Smollett?
Charlie Barkley. I know you're old pals with him.
I actually do know Chuck, but I would call him Chuck, not Charlie.
Chuck. He has been talking about Jussie Smollett on various venues, but he was on Stephen Colbert last night.
Right.
And this is his take on the charges being dropped.
What do you make of the charges being dropped?
I think that we all lose. I think my black friends, my gay black friends, I think they lose. Because there's all repercussions when you a minority. There's always a double standard. You have to understand that and accept that. I don't know that kid. I wish him nothing but the best. But you have to understand, you have to always look at the big picture. Like, you know, there's a lot of gay kids out there who are struggling. They're getting beat up, they're getting bullied and things like that, and that's not good. And then you see, you know, there's this tenuous relationship between the black community and the cops. And we made the cops look really bad in this scenario. And there's probably going to be some resentment. So the bottom line is everybody lost in this scenario.
Yeah, so he really, you know,
how about that?
Kind of sums up really the bottom line.
Deep thought from Chuck.
Yeah, aside from all the legal things that everyone is bantying about, in a real kind of sense, what effect does this have on people and future crimes? And your pal Charlie. CB.
Charlie Barkley. Hey, good morning. It's Charlie Barkley.
What do you think he would do to me if I called him CB to his face?
He'd probably smack you. You know, and you deserve it, to be honest with you.
I would.
The mayor will be in here in just a few minutes to talk about that story and other things.
He's had a few words to say about this.
Yeah, good for him for defending the city and the police. Angelina Jolie is going to be in a superhero movie.
She's in talks right now to be in her first ever Marvel movie. She's been in comic book movies.
So she's going to be Hot Girl?
Before, that is not the name of the character.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hot Girl. She's in talks for the movie version of The Eternals. And Marvel comic fans will know more about that than me. But I know because I'm reading it from the script right here in front of me.
Uh-huh.
That says it's a team of heroes created by Jack Kirby, who is the man behind Captain America, the Avengers, and other comic book icons.
Is there a chance she'll be wearing a very tight outfit in this movie?
I
That's how I see the casting going here.
I know that she does not care for wearing the tight outfits.
Mm.
Okay. Now that you bring that up, Steve, I think it'd be funny if there was a superhero movie where everyone was in baggy clothing.
Right?
Right.
Right.
Like, well, that's my concept with Dean, middle-aged man. Middle-aged man who can stop any criminal as long as they're really slow.
The city's being attacked. Okay, just a minute.
Right. Hey, could you get him to stop at a bakery? Because I know I'm stopping there.
Kind of. Can we get a corned beef sandwich first?
I got some movie news out.
Yeah, we have a lot.
All right, so disability groups are upset about the movie Us. Why?
They're, you know, did you see the movie, by the way?
I have not seen it.
What the? Steve?
I know.
Come on, all the cool.
Listen, I'm a huge disappointment to everybody, not just you.
Well, it just came out, though, on Saturday, right?
I know, but Steve should be... Yeah. All the cool kids are talking about this movie.
You're right. You're right. I'm a disappointment.
You want taking in a horror movie on a Tuesday
exactly.
night.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, take a little Abigail. Go see a movie. It's going to be in therapy anyway with you as the grandfather.
No question about it.
There are disability groups that are being extremely critical of Lupita Nyong'o's inspiration for the voice that she uses for her evil doppelganger.
What's the voice?
It's a very throaty. It almost sounds like that. It all sounds like this. So, you know, just to try. Have you ever heard Robert F. Kennedy Jr. speak?
Yeah, yep. He's got a specific medical condition.
He has a neurological disorder. It's called spasmodic dysphonia.
Mm-hmm. It's and a band I was in.
Lupita Nyong'o has said that
That's
she.
Also a band I was in.
She patterned her voice characterization for the evil part of her character on Robert F. Kennedy's, the way that he speaks with spasmodic dysphonia.
Okay, I'm not being flip here. I don't understand why disability groups are upset about the voice choice.
Here's why. They say that connecting actual disabilities to evil characters marginalizes people who are actually living with those disabilities. That someone who, you know, goes to the grocery store now with that disability and speaks like that is now associated with this evil character in the movie.
Seems like a stretch.
Now, Dean, if she probably was doing a press junket and had to answer that question.
Correct.
You know, and so, like, if she doesn't say that, which I don't blame her for even explaining because I'm sure her intent wasn't to marginalize anybody. But if she's not doing press after press and answering, you know, some mundane questions constantly, she's not then being... No group is targeting her as being insensitive, you know?
I think so. I think it's because she specifically said that she patterned it after this
That's where it came from.
Neurological disorder. Hmm. So their disability groups are saying it's hard enough for people who have disabilities. This makes it even worse. But I get what Steve is saying. I mean, how it's an evil doppelganger.
Yeah.
Right.
We all know how deep evil doppelgangers talk.
Yeah.
The in Steve's range, your range is limited. You only do British-ish.
I do. I do everything from this voice to Mrs. Doubtfire and back. That's as far as
and
I go.
And then you speak French.
And I do speak French.
I don't know if you have ever heard my French evil doppelganger voice.
You know,
I'm going to eat a baguette and then kill you.
When I remove my beret, my superpowers come to be.
Wee wee, Emmy wee wee.
All right, Guys and Dolls coming to the big screen.
Yeah, they're going
to
remake Guys and Dolls as a full length.
Let's do one of the songs from Guys and Dolls.
Love be a lady too.
Oh, sorry, wrong song.
Gotta dance.
I don't know. I couldn't think of a single song.
There's a lot of them. Luck Be a Lady Tonight. The song Guys and
Don't
Dolls.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
The guy's always doing it for some doll.
Wait, guys, Dave's got one ready.
No, that's the one. Dean beat me to it.
So. Yes.
Dave, come on.
So mine aren't in this?
Don't Cry for Me, Argentina is not in Guys and Dolls.
This is a whole new version, though. It could be, maybe they're going to do like a mashup of famous musicals.
Right.
And, you know, that may wind up being in there, but... they haven't cast it yet. They haven't done anything yet.
The music of the night.
Wasn't that in Seinfeld where George gave Jerry like Guys and Dolls tickets or something
for a birthday gift? Yeah,
and then they couldn't be seen together.
You sounded a little like Robert Goulet there.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
Almost like I was doppelganging him.
One of the most famous musicals of all time. I'm shocked that it hasn't been remade since 1955. Wow. That's when the Marlon Brando, Frank Sinatra, Gene Simmons, Vivian Blaine, that famous movie version. That's how long it's been.
That's
since
when Dave was born.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
And Guys and Dolls.
I feel like I've gotten all the songs in. China is doing something to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, they de-gayed it.
If you de-gay Bohemian Rhapsody, why show the movie at all?
Is there anything left? If you
so ridiculous.
If you de-gay the movie,
that's stupid.
The movie, the Queen biopic, has been released in China, but they took every reference to anything gay out of the movie.
It's just ridiculous.
The scenes, the dialogue. There's a scene they took out how he met his eventual boyfriend, but then at the end of the movie, you see them together without explanation.
They take out the kissing.
The kissing. Are you kidding me? Yeah,
kissing. gone. I had a similar movie experience when I appeared in the movie Untamed Heart with Christian Slater and Marissa Tomei and Rosie Perez. And I was cut completely out of the movie, and for no reason, I appear at the end during the funeral scene when everybody else in the scene makes sense, and I'm there with them.
Because you were cut out previously in the
movie? Yeah, I was cut out previously.
So any explanation as to who that guy is?
Yeah, I was Christian Slater's boss.
Were you doing anything gay?
No. But in China, they actually cut me out of the movie completely.
In China, they put Steve back in the movie.
And a Game of Thrones documentary.
Yes, HBO has announced that they haven't made enough money off of this already.
Right.
And they are going to be producing a special documentary that is leading up to the end of the series.
Have you heard about these Game of Thrones birthday parties for kids?
Yes.
Okay, that makes no sense
for kids.
How would kids who don't see it, fans of it, and what do you do? Have one child kill another child? I don't understand how that even works.
It's the dragons and the costumes.
Yes,
and
there's going to be a Game of Thrones night at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, did you see that?
At April 23rd. They're like, winter's coming.
Winter is coming.
It's like,
well, April 23rd, it could be winter at Wrigley Field.
But who's letting kids watch Game of Thrones?
I don't think they know it from actually watching.
They just know that there's dragons. And, right. This is going to be on 1 week after the series finale. The final season will begin April the 14th. This is what HBO, in their press release, they say it'll be a funny, heartbreaking story told with wit and intimacy.
Ooh. Do you remember near the end of the run of the particular show that I'm about to talk about, I had a meeting at Daily Plaza, and shockingly, I was pushing it to get there on time. And so I'm trotting across Daily Plaza, and I've got a black leather jacket on. And there's a homeless gentleman there who I had seen before. And he looks up at me, and he goes, "Hey, Tony Soprano!"
Oh.
And I stopped, and I went over to him. I shook his hand. I go, "How'd you get cable?"
That's a good point.
It's kind of the Game of Thrones thing.
That is a very good point.
So I gave him all the money I had, and I said Dean would bring more. All right, so the mayor should be here any second, Dean. And as always, we appreciate the moron.
I don't think he's mad at me about anything right now.
I'm going to have him call you.
Well, believe me, that's happened before.
I mean, just in general.
His people have called and said the mayor's not happy with something you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I have your acronym.
Oh, for moron?
Yes.
What do you got?
Mulling over recent odd news.
Oh, that's not bad. Mulling over recent odd news. That's not bad at all.
So do you have to say that in the song? Mulling over recent. Like,
you know, if anybody can rhyme all that crap together, it's DeCoss.
I hear that as a nice angelic chorus.
That also might be a
mulling
slam.
Over
odd. Yeah. Odd used in there might be. Crazy.
No one's denying it.
Odd moron.
Yeah, I'm proud of it.
Yeah. And think of all the things that rhyme with mulling. Yeah, it's probably an issue. All right, Dean, thank you.
Say hello to the mayor.
Just a bunch of crazy guys and dogs.
Yeah. That's what our jingle should sound like. That's a good starting point.
Yeah, that was punchy.
That's a good starting point for what our jingle should sound like.
All right, we're working on it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
8:39, Mayor Emanuel joins us. As always, appreciate the access. Nice to talk to you. And I've got some cardboard boxes for you for the office. But I'll drop those off. Listen, I want to talk about Smollett, but I want to get to a couple of things first off that I think are good news because you know how much I love this city. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to talk about the good stuff that's happening along with the stuff that makes my head explode.
Mm-hmm. But it is fun for all of us watching as it explodes, all the different things. And the wires coming
out. Right, the wires come out and boing, boing.
Have you ever seen a synopsis out of
it's not good. Head come, it's just not good. Yeah, it's not good. Okay. First off, the Police Academy graduation the other day. Record number of graduates?
200 and I think... I've done, you know, I wouldn't say hundreds, but over 50. I've never had 297 officers, 50 sergeant promotions, 12 lieutenant promotions.
It's got to be pretty inspiring, sir.
Oh, and here's the other thing. 39.5% are women, largest female ever. We have about 100 Chicago Public School graduates, which is a change I had put in with the city council that if you come out of CPS, we give you points on the for police and fire and other city jobs. We have 18 veterans of the armed forces. We had close to 60 officers whose parents, you know,
legacies.
Three officers are the fourth generation.
That's tremendous.
It is. You know, I said to Amy when she was there with me, and I've always said this to Eddie, they must be getting younger. I mean, it is their kids and their inspiration, their sense of service, their commitment. And
but the quality of cop coming in, too, is very impressive because it's not just wide-eyed kids who want to do this. Mm-hmm. It's, like you said, legacies who've heard their parents and their grandparents. And people who've served. People who've served in other spots.
Their country in the armed services. It's great story. A young man comes towards me, and I said, what branch of the armed forces? He says, Air Force. And Amy goes, how do you know? I said, just the way he carries himself.
Yeah, the way he walks.
This was not, you know, this was off the football field.
It's not a talk show host.
Yeah, this guy, our radio show host at that. On a low level channel. He doesn't have FCC approval.
What are you talking about, man count for? He's not here. Mayor Emanuel, also, you have some tech jobs to announce, and this is a cool story today.
500 jobs coming to Chicago in cloud software computing. This is the fourth or fifth tech company this year alone that we've announced either moving their headquarters or dramatic expansion. This is a very exciting company, Excel, that is expanding here in Chicago, 500 jobs, and it's a reinforcement of what's happening in the tech scene in Chicago's growth as a real digital tech center.
Yeah, we don't need to go out and sell the fact. It's already happened. This is a tech hub. Tech companies want to come here.
Fastest growing sector of the Chicago economy is the tech sector.
Well, and you pointed out that there's over 80 technology companies here in Chicago now, which is like...
It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a very big deal, and it's one. In fact, it's the fastest growing sector. It's what's driving a lot of the office boom and construction in the city of Chicago, as you know. A while ago, Google announced dramatic expansion of their offices here. We announced the other day from a trip I had done out east, a headquarter from San Francisco. It was people I met out east, but they're a San Francisco-based company. They're moving their headquarters here to the city of Chicago with over 100 jobs. So I think this is – and the other good news is, you know, Chicago is the most diversified economy in the United States. So whether it's technology, whether it's finance, whether it's transportation.
Right.
This week we cut the ribbon on the Olive Harvey Community College for Transportation, Distribution, Logistics. North Point Logistics is putting 3,000 jobs on the southeast side of Chicago because of what we did at Olive Harvey.
That's very cool. By the way, I hadn't thought about this. Ribbon cutting for you in the next life. I mean, you got some serious experience in ribbon cutting.
Well, I have my own.
If you're like a ribbon cutting hitman. You're like a freelance ribbon cutting guy that flies around and cuts ribbons.
Shovel scissors.
Right?
Yeah, it's like this.
Come on.
I'm going to give a whole new meaning to the scissors. What was that? The Scissor Man?
Edward Scissors.
I was having a blank there. For
Scissor Man is something else.
But you, I want you to, one thing. There's a story today in the Wall Street Journal about Chicago leading the country. There's other states doing it, cities, but we're the only one that has now full day kindergarten, full day pre-K, and free community college. We've added 4 years to a child's education.
Bookends.
And you got to, you know, the rules of the road for the economy are start earlier, go longer. And Chicago's the only one that's modernized its education to reflect the day of the economy today.
So I get back.
Which means our kids are better prepared.
I get back from Phoenix on Monday night, and I'm looking at the luggage rack, and I'm looking at the belts at the luggage rack, and I'm thinking that's the same thing I looked at in 1994. Was in Chicago. We need expansion. We need modernization. Growth. We need growth. Mm-hmm. But it's happening.
Yes. First of all, we picked the architect for the first. It's a new terminal. It's a Global Alliance terminal. We're taking the old one that was built nearly 60 years down.
It was the old Terminal 5.
Yeah. No. Terminal 2.
Oh, 2.
5 is getting gate expansion, and Delta, Virgin, all the others are going there. It will stay as an international terminal with expansion of domestic.
Okay.
The new Terminal 2 Global Alliance terminal between 1 and 3.
Yep.
That would be where 2 goes, Steve. Work with
me. Okay, let me write this down. 1, 2, yeah, 3. I got
work
it.
With me. I got it. Okay, are we good now?
It's new math.
I see a little steam coming out of
the
air.
That's the new math.
So, Genie Gang, Studio ORD. They put together a great new Global Alliance terminal. We're going to add about 3 million more square feet of terminal space and retail and all the jobs that come with it. We're going to add 25% new gates, and every decade you could add 25% new gates. Our runways will be finished, all 8, by next year. We'll have the most...
Is that right? Next year?
Most modern and efficient runway system in the United States. In fact, if you really think about it strategically... When it's done, we'll have lifted Midway's capacity and moved it to O'Hare, so we're the only city in America that added a third airport. That's what the runway configuration. So from runways to terminal space to new gates, Chicago, the world has come to Chicago, and Chicago's going to the world.
Well,
and this is now the best connected and best and busiest airport in America and number 2 in the world, and we plan on taking Heathrow out of number 1.
And that expansion is crucial. The other thing I noticed the other night is you and I are old enough to remember when your wife,
yourself,
your kids, your family could meet you at the gate.
Yeah.
You know, pre-9/11 meet you at the gate. We got off the plane the other night, and O'Hare was jammed. And I'm thinking, could you imagine?
You used to remember?
If family members could come out to the gate, that would be impossible. So this expansion not only creates room. Sandberg brought this up earlier. It's a dining and dating destination based on the blueprint.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of the modern thinking of airports today is it is actually a shopping mall that also allows you to fly somewhere.
Yeah.
And from dining and all that, as you said, and shopping. And we're going to go from 4.2 million to a little shy of 8 million square feet of new retail space.
It's a double.
The other thing is close to 12,000 construction jobs.
Wow.
Over 500,000 jobs in Chicago depend on O'Hare and the capacity to grow. And take a company like we're announcing today, 500 new jobs coming.
Right.
Their desire is unbelievably educated workforce with the Midwest work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable. They can live in the city. And they can get to any client anywhere in the globe that they serve. It's a global company based here, tech. They can go to any market in the United States, any market in North and South America, any market in Europe, and any market in Asia, multiple times a day and week. That investment, now, there was a period of time where Chicago rested on its laurels. Atlanta, LAX started to pass us up. We've invested in that future. We're going to seize that future, and the future is Chicago's if we keep building for it. And I also, what I love, and I do want to say this about the terminal, is we're an aviation capital of the world. We're clearly an airport that is a centerpiece of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the architectural leader of the world. And you bring all three of those strengths into a single endeavor. And who better than Genie Gang as a... MacArthur Genius Award-winning architect to design the future expression of what air travel is going to be and Chicago's statement about it.
Nice little serendipitous tie there.
Yeah, she's a badass.
Is that allowed? I just like the record. How many times have I been on the show?
1,000.
Okay, how many times have I swore?
On the air?
Yeah.
Almost none.
Almost none? Zero. And I would like to say that I would like to close out my tenure as mayor, come on, and actually say what I want to say.
Right.
You know that bubble above my head?
Okay, but
all
this,
those words?
Let's be clear. This is not your final appearance as mayor.
This is more of a female.
You know what? I want to tell you this. My mother-in-law, big Republican, used to always, when I was on like the Sunday talk shows, she goes, "Oh, you did so well." I said, "Mary, you didn't think I did well. You were just happy for 12 minutes. What I really was going to say, I did come out of my mouth, and you didn't have to explain at the country club why I said that on TV."
The one thing about the design that seems like it's going to work, that it's not going to make for us
regular, you know, vacation travelers mm-hmm. that aren't necessarily doing a lot of corporate travel, it's not going to make going to the airport a nightmare because you've made it so big and such an international hub. Like, it seems like it's still laid out where
you're
not going to have to allow extra time.
This terminal, the Global Alliance terminal, only one in the United States, you will get off any domestic flight and onto an international in the same terminal. You will literally take your Fitbit off at O'Hare. You don't need it. And that is going to be a major advantage. No other airport in America has it. We will have that. And you'll be able, if you're flying American or United or any other alliance airlines, you'll stay in the same terminal.
It's a big deal.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, how many?
And here's, again, in the last 8 years, we went from 39 to 58 million annual visitors. 150,000 jobs in the hospitality industry. This airport, beyond the business side, and just purely the hospitality with the James Beard Awards coming.
Yep.
The new, you know, we have obviously the NFL opening football game that will be here between Green Bay and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that and all the tourism and other theaters that are happening. This is the year of Chicago Theater. Having an airport that allows people to come in and out with ease, that's only going to add to Chicago's economic vitality and strength.
Steve, the Nickelodeon Slime Fest at Huntington Beach that we talked about yesterday.
That
brings them in. Pitbull needs somewhere to land.
Well, listen, everybody does. When we come back, breaking news, if you will. And by the way, I don't mean like, you know, Wolf Blitzer's an old friend, but Wolf gets his beard cut, and it's breaking news on CNN sometimes. Mm-hmm. We actually have things to talk about relating to the Jussie Smollett. It's the mess. We are back, and I almost put something on the air there I shouldn't have because, you know me, you can't trust me. Mayor Emanuel.
Yeah, because you get complicated between one and three.
Exactly. just another pretty face. Mayor Emanuel's here. All right, so a public thank you for what you and what the superintendent said the other day. Well, you don't need that from me or anybody, but you need to defend the city when you have to, and you do. So a quick backstory here. It's the Jussie Smollett case. All sides seem to agree that he was guilty. Grand jury comes down, says, yeah, there's plenty here to go ahead with the prosecution. And inexplicably, the decision is made to dismiss the case.
Yeah.
What am I missing?
A ton, obviously. Let me break out the first piece. There's two parts, and they're related, but we got to deal with them. Part A that is really upsetting. There are cases, the state's attorney, the police department show the grand jury a sliver of information, come back and says, yes, a hoax was committed. Here are the 16 counts.
Right.
Everybody, both sides of that law enforcement, go. That's what he's charged with. Now, either a hate crime was committed in the city, and we need to know that, because this is a city that believes hate has no home here.
Right.
And the only place it has a home is when there is silence.
Sure.
We have to have an unambiguous message. Now, he is charged with 16 counts for creating a hoax about a hate crime. He walks out, says, I'm innocent. They say, no, he's guilty, and the police work is good. Now, you can't be both on the same case.
Yeah.
So, to me, was he or was he not guilty of a hoax, or was there a hate crime committed? Yes or no, it's a very straightforward.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, out of the blue, with no knowledge, all of a sudden, you have a situation where the charges are dropped. There's an explanation that you have all of a sudden, charges are cleared. It's all sealed. $10,000. Quote-unquote community service, of which that's not in the court records.
Well, not only is it not in the court records, he goes over to Rainbow Push, he opens mail for 2 days, six hours, and he greets visitors.
And there's no sense of contrite, no remorse, no sense of responsibility.
And he's still trashing the police department.
Yes, and our officers did a great job.
Right.
They took a crime that was called a hate crime for sexual orientation and for race. They took it seriously. They dedicated the resources to deal with it, to find out who perpetuated it. And we found out the person calling the police was the perpetuator.
Right.
That is what the grand jury believed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, poof.
And nobody got a phone call.
We know more about how the Pope is picked than we know what happened here.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Okay.
And we didn't see any white smoke.
And to me, this is now what's going to happen. I want you to understand.
But just be clear. Yeah. Super didn't get a call. You didn't get a call.
No.
You found out when we found out.
Just almost simultaneously, yeah. Basically. And I was like, with the soup up, I said, you got to be kidding me. And this is a whitewash. And I will just say to you, so one level of some sense of accountability restored to what looks like the scales of justice were tipped for those with influence.
Yeah.
The police right now are assembling the cost of what was put into this.
Okay.
And then the Corporation Council is going to take action based on those costs directly to Jesse Smollett.
Can the city sue him?
That is... What part of 1, 2, 3 is this guy's missing? Okay. This is the two part. Work with me, Steve. Okay.
So I was actually at 1.5 yeah. waiting for you to get yeah. to 2.
Here's the deal. When we assemble the cost, you're not in the room because uh-huh. numbers are not your strong suit. Okay.
Just another one, pretty face.
First.
Yeah.
The police are right now finalizing the cost okay. that was used of police resources to come to the understanding that, in fact, this was a hoax and not a real hate
total
crime.
Total taxpayer dollars.
What we spent. The Corporation Council, once they have the finalized and feel good about the numbers, will then send a letter to Jesse Smollett and his attorneys trying to recoup those costs mm-hmm. for the city. Mm-hmm. It is a small way of both acknowledging, one, guilt, mm-hmm. and two, that we spent these resources and the taxpayers are deserved at minimum, because I think there's a whole level, as I said the other day, ethical costs. Sure. Because he's still walking around, hey, I'm innocent. Everything I said from day one is true. That actually we're going to get the resources back, but come with those resources that is implicitly, if you pay it, that the city spent money to uncover what the grand jury discovered. And I want to reiterate from which I said right when with the superintendent, we only show the grand jury a portion
yeah.
of what the police had collected, right. The Chicago Police Department. They did a good job here, as they do in other cases that have happened with new technologies and all the stuff that we have from
Chicago. So forget about the shot in the crotch to the morale of the police department. The continued degradation of the reputation of the city of Chicago, completely unwarranted. Mm-hmm. You can't calculate what that damage is. Mm-hmm. Where does this go then from here?
That's it. Well, first of all, we're going to deal with this level. And the second is, I mean, there's other pieces as relates. There's, again, I try to separate these, even though they're kind of stacked on top of each yeah. other. Core, was a hate crime committed or a hoax committed?
Right.
And who committed the hate crime or who committed the hoax? And they should be held accountable.
Right.
In some way or another.
But we know those answers.
Okay. There's a legal process.
Yeah, not in my world.
Okay. That I know.
Yeah.
Okay. The point is, the state's attorney still believes that his $10,000 and quote-unquote community service at Operation Push is an acknowledgement that he actually committed the hoax, and that's his payment of retribution, of his payment for what happened. We're going to basically recoup the financial. As it relates to the city, I think we have spoken with one voice
yeah.
that we know what happened here. I just will say, you know, look, in my own view, President Trump, just sit this one out, okay? The fact is, you're a guy, I take umbrage at the fact that you have a person sitting in the Oval Office who drew a moral equivalency between in Virginia between those who were fighting bigotry and those who were perpetuating right. bigotry.
Both sides.
Yeah. We take in this city, whether you have a sign in your window that says One Chicago, whether you have hate has no home here. And I tell everybody, and one of the things I'm proud of as a city, when we had Syrian refugees come, myself and a number of aldermen with the Islamic Institute organized their first Thanksgiving dinner. We mm-hmm. gave the kids backpacks, their first winter coats. We welcomed new refugees to this city
right.
and gave them their first Thanksgiving about, and that was the first step of a journey, besides the winter coat, of becoming Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we are as a city. We have 140 languages spoken in our school. We have people of all different backgrounds, kids today in high school who are comfortable acknowledging their sexual orientation, who they love, and we respect that. And we try to make sure that they have the support so they're comfortable with their religion, their faith, their culture, their race, their sexual orientation, their gender. And my view is we have a person in the Oval Office who degrades it when he does not know the difference between somebody willing to use their body and their soul to fight bigotry and make it morally equivalent with those who want to perpetuate.
Look,
bigotry.
I agree with you. Sit it out.
We don't need, and especially given that you don't know how the criminal justice system works and given what happened, sit this one out.
We have it covered.
Because the other time, you were sitting there lip syncing with Smollett. This was a horrible hate crime. Mm-hmm. It is not. Now, that said, there also has to be getting to the bottom of how, in fact, a deal got worked out where you have one person literally and nobody, and I'm not a lawyer, thank God, but everything I have read says that if you work out an agreement like this, there is an acknowledgement by the person that what they did was they're responsible, right, and accountable. And what gets people rightfully upset is there seems to be, for those of influence and privilege, one rule book, and for everybody else,
two justices.
Yeah, and it's wrong. And if you're going to restore confidence in the justice system and keep building it, not just restore it, but build it, you can't have two systems.
Is there a better answer, another answer, other than a modicum of fame, whatever fame he has, and money as to why this went down the way it went down, or is it too early to know? Because the motivation is, I mean, everybody from the greatest legal mind to me is going, what? It just doesn't add up. There's well, look, no part of this that makes sense.
I don't want to say, I don't want to.
Well, you have said. You called it a whitewash. That's what it is.
No, what I was going to say was, if there was an answer, we would have known it by now. Okay? You're literally, today is Thursday. This all came down Tuesday. If it was easy, somebody would explain it.
Is this going to cost Kim Fox your job?
I don't. That's the least in of I'm worried about. Kim Fox will. It's also her office. She has said she recused herself. This is the decision by the office and everybody below. What happened here? We deserve answers as a city. My thing is, I know you want to jump to the politics.
I really don't. But are fair questions that people have. And here's the thing. You can't recuse yourself by calling it like you're a little kid on a playground. There's a procedure you have to go through, which she did not go through. The whole thing stinks.
Look, here, if you know, my view is, if you can explain it, if we knew, everybody's reacting this way because none of it adds up. There's not a part of this that makes sense to anybody. And if it was literally 48 hours later, you would know the answers to some basic fundamental questions nobody can explain. The reason, like, I walked, when the superintendent and the police leadership and I walked off the stage after the graduation of those wonderful young men and women who are actually now joining the police department, and we looked at, you know, I don't know, there was 15 cameras, I don't know how many reporters were sitting all over.
Sure.
Everybody's searching for answers. And 48 hours later, We have more questions than we have answers, and we as a public deserve answers. Answers, was there a hoax or not? And if there was a hate crime, who did it? And if there was a hoax, who's responsible for it?
Yeah, I want to know if the fix is in.
I want to know that.
I want to know if the fix is in at the office.
Yeah, and then I want to know, and we all deserve an answer, how did the decision come about? If this is a normal course, does that mean that everybody that you have followed this pattern in never acknowledges some sense of culpability in what happened here? Because what are you giving $10,000 up for if you're innocent?
Right.
You're that loose.
And by the way, if you are innocent, you've got your high-powered attorneys who are now trying to sue the city of Chicago, okay, and you're on every major show in the country saying you're innocent.
I stand by the Chicago Police Department.
So do I.
I stand by their work. They worked hard. And they came to the bottom of
this. And they need to know that the city has their back.
They do.
And I believe they do as well.
Yeah. And I'm just, look, people deserve answers from the beginning to the end.
Shame on him. And all
and also, as attorney, walk around, it is a whitewash.
Right.
And it's not on the level.
Do you believe we'll have answers before you leave office?
I have no idea. But I just know this. Until the answers are provided, well, you know, there's other things we're going to do, like we did on the airport, inviting a new company in to expand and create 500 jobs. I'm very proud also of what Dr. Janice did in laying out our five-year education plan, which is noted now because of our rising graduation. This is not going to be the dominant thing, but this won't go away until people feel like they've gotten some, literally, answers to questions and some sense of culpability, some sense of contrition, some sense of remorse that what happened here. And not even a statement, not even a sense of gesture that here is what I am responsible. And that is what is irritating people.
You know what amazes me? I know you got to run, but you know what amazes me?
No, I'm enjoying this. It's like therapy.
You get the break of your life.
I don't even have to use Blue Cross Blue Shield for this.
No, I'm going to need to see your card. You get the break of
your
life.
I'll give you a dental one.
Zero gratitude. Yeah. You come out at the bare minimum. Even if you don't want to admit you're guilty, you say, listen, I have nothing else to say about this. I appreciate the people who have supported me. And you leave. And you hope nobody follows you.
Go back to New York.
wherever.
Yeah, here's my thing. I just want to say this as the mayor. I want to thank all the people that welcomed, not just him, the TV and film industry, to come to the city, create jobs. Welcomed here for his career. But more importantly, I want to thank all the people of the city of Chicago who say that we're a city with one value system.
Right.
That we welcome you, whatever your who you love, whatever your faith is, whatever your background. And I want to thank the police department. Amen. I want to thank the men and women who every day, not perfectly, and Eddie and the leadership team for what they do. And I believe when the 16 counts were brought by the grand jury, it was built on the foundation the police had, and they have more material. They did a good job, and they do not need to take lip from an actor who's still degrading them, the police department, claiming his innocence, when in fact everybody else that was quote-unquote in the room with the judge says he was actually culpable of a hoax.
There's not a thing I could add to that.
And the police did a great job.
I appreciate you being here.
Thanks.
And we'll talk again before you're done. And the last time you come in, you can curse then.
No, not going to do it, man. Here's the thing. You know, in Congress, when if you say something wrong, your words are taken down.
Yeah.
6 years on the floor of the House. 7 years in with President Clinton. Two with President Obama. Eight as mayor. Can't once on either TV or on the House floor see my words taken down. And I got 2 months to test it myself.
You're going to get close.
Yeah. Yeah. I got close today.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. Thank you, man.
See you, man.
That's Mayor Emanuel. Anna Delavantes, it's an update. It's an update, Anna. Anna Delavantes, Anna Delavantes, it's an update, Anna. You've been listening. You've been hearing a smooth journalist. From the mind of John DeCoste. How long's it been since you heard that?
I miss that song. Thank you, John DeCoste.
Well, we miss you. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, it's good to see everyone in the AM.
All right, so here's the deal. Here's the deal. We're going to talk to Tony Esposito coming up in just a couple minutes. You guys are out at the United Center all the time.
What a blast. Yeah, I love being out there.
And Tony is like the most genuine human being on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You ever meet anybody more earnest?
No.
He's got those big eyes like a golden retriever. He looks you in the eye. He tells you what he thinks. And a lot of people would say, look, he got hit in the head with a lot of hockey pucks. But I just love Tony. I think he's a great guy.
Such a gentleman, too, right? He's just so great to talk to. You forget that he's this great in the world of sports because he's just so down to earth. And he just sits there and just loves to talk to people. Really. Genuine.
Right, so he'll join us in a second. Ed Farmer's coming up as well. And we'll continue with our friend Anna in a second. But let's get back on track here.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
/9:23, you know, it's been too long. It's not, Dave, I don't know how long it's been since we've had this superstar on the show.
It has been a long time.
It's been months. The Blackhawks are going to honor Phil and Tony Esposito, Tony the better-looking brother, with its one more shift ceremony in the Game of the Blues next Wednesday, April 3rd at the United Center. One more shift is just a way to pay tribute to one of the all-time greats, and certainly Tony is that. Three-time Vezina Trophy winner as the NHL's top goaltender, 70, 72, and 74, won the Calder Trophy in 70 as Rookie of the Year, holds a franchise record for career wins and shutouts. And he's a snappy dresser and a great guy.
Yes, he was in. We talked to him on August 20th, 2018.
Has it been that long?
It is.
Wow. And Anna DeVlantis is with us as we say hi to our friend Tony Esposito. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, how about that for an introduction? Man, did I take care of you.
That was a little bit over the top, you know.
Tell everybody how you ended up being goalie. When you were kids, Phil, is it true Phil wouldn't let you play unless you were goalie?
Not really. Oh. We had two guys, my brother and I, when we had the ice in the backyard. Because we grew up in Canada and you could keep ice all winter.
Mm-hmm.
And we took turns a little bit, but he was the goalie one time and then I was. But what happened was there was no face masks. Nothing. So Phil sort of got shy and he didn't want to go on the goal anymore.
Phil said, I want girls to like me. I'm not going to have pucks hit me in the head.
So, Tony,
that was fun times.
Tony, how often do you get on skates, and how much are you looking forward to the one more shift?
Well, I don't think I'll have a problem. I rollerblade still and do all that kind of stuff.
Good.
And
good.
So, I mean, skating, I don't think it'll be an issue. But I'm going to go down in the morning and just put the equipment. And, like, they want me to use my oldest equipment in the, from the early 70s and that.
Wow.
So I got to see if I can dig that up and get it up there and then put it on and skate with it. I think it'll be fun.
The mask, you have shown me the mask, one of the masks that you had on. This mask is basically a child's Halloween costume mask.
Unbelievable.
It's a thin sheet of plastic that didn't breathe. You know, your face would sweat. And I imagine when you got hit with a puck with that mask on, you felt it to the tips of your toes.
Well, it sort of like made you like almost like blank out, almost like your eyes you wouldn't see for a second, and it spread the impact so that you got cut, but it was on the bone.
Oh.
It was a true cut, and rather than a jagged cut like when you get hit in the face,
it's cleaner
without a mask.
Tony, talk about the how that's changed, what the goalies will wear over time, and how you've seen that evolve in the game, and what do you think about that? I mean, I can only imagine the injuries that you got back in the day.
Well, I think it's a good idea. You don't give them as much protection as possible. And with the helmets and the cages now, I don't foresee any, you know, really major problems in the net, especially now with the nets, they come off. See, in the old days, they were ground into the ice, and they never moved.
That's the other thing people don't realize. They're on posts now, and they can pop off the posts. Yeah. And if a goalie's smart with his shoulder, he's getting the rush on. He'll throw his shoulder into the crossbar and pop that net right off. Sandberg.
You know what happened, Steve, was they wouldn't run at the goalie as much in those days because, you know, you just move over a little bit and you hit the post and you break a leg or something.
It's insane. By the way, this is all sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Sandberg, the question comes from Lucas Eltoff from Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. And Tony, the question they have for you, and by the way, Lucas is going to get an autographed Chicago Blackhawks puck courtesy of MB Financial Bank. What advice do you have for kids who want to play goalie? If you had a little kid that wanted to play goalie, what would you tell them now?
Well, first of all, I'd get him to play all positions and let him practice skating a lot because the goaltender has to be a very good skater because your balance and all that. So learn your position, learn the different positions, and then make your judgment when you're, you know, 11 or 12 years old if you really want to pursue that. But, you know, it's a sort of a lonely life because either win or lose, and everybody blames you anyway. So,
Tony, the Blackhawks are going to open the season next year in Finland against the Philadelphia Flyers. By the way, they announced yesterday the tickets for the exhibition game in Berlin sold out in 19 minutes.
Wow.
And the game itself, the opener, not in Finland, in Prague.
Right.
That game, they had 90% of the tickets already sold in a short amount of time. What do you think about that idea of going over? Of course, the Blackhawks did it in Finland previously, but going over there to open the season.
Well, I think it's only a positive for the NHL because you spread your message around the world more. And Europe, you'd be surprised how hockey is very important to them.
Sure.
And they're really involved with it. So I think that it's a good idea. We get public relations and see the quality of the team.
It's one more shift. The Blackhawks honoring Phil and Tony Esposito, top 100 of all-time NHL players. You know, the legends. By the way, Phil's the taller, less attractive one. And
he's fine.
And you know what? It's going to be a great night, and I'm glad they're doing this because I can't think of a better brother tandem. And knowing you like I do, and knowing your brother a little bit, I'm really happy for both of you.
Well, I think it's a great thing not only for Phil and I, but for the fans because sure. You know you get to see. One more time, you get to remember it. You remember the 70s and 80s. And I think that's important, you know, for the fan base. And I just hope that I don't fall down.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're going to be just fine. And last question. Every time I've been talking to your old pals, the guys you played with and stuff, they say Tony would fan out his equipment in front of him, kind of a half circle of his equipment in front of him. The one thing you didn't want to do is touch it. Don't touch my stuff. Is that true?
Well, my preparation was my stuff was laid out right in front of me, and I never conversed with the other team or other players because I was too focused on
getting your game face
on trying to get ready for the game. And the one thing I didn't want to do is get into the game and I'm not prepared mentally. Sure, you don't have good games sometime, but if you prepare mentally and I fail, then I accept it. But when you're not ready to play, that's when you make mistakes and get behind and
sure.
Put your team in trouble.
So don't touch my stuff.
Just like Steve every That's morning right. Before the show.
I imagine you do that.
I'll see you guys next week. Congrats again, Tony.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you talking to me. And, you know, just keep going, man.
That's it. That's it. Just keep going. Just
keep going.
And the pitch from Green. Swinging along with the left. Down the line. Does it have enough? At the track. At the wall. Game-winning home run. Light it up, and they win the ball game. Oh, my, what a game today.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Anna DeVlantis in studio with us. You excited about baseball season?
I am, and good to see all you guys here in the AM.
Yeah, thanks for coming back to the show. Mm-hmm. I'm continuing to torment Roe and said, you're thinking about changing your mind.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, he comes pre-tortured, so it's nice that you sort of add to that.
Yesterday, Anna, we promoted your appearance on the show with Roe in studio.
Oh, gosh,
so that
oh, no.
He could be actually just to really see it happen. Bother him.
Yeah. And I told Roe on the plane back from Phoenix, I got kennel cough. Uh-huh. And just by talking about the fact that I had this cough, he started to feel sick.
He does, yeah. We now have an official physician for the Roe Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis, and he's amazing, Dr. Jim. And he comes by, but I'm not sure. I think his first experience with Roe, he was a little worried, you know, Roe stopped him in the hallway and was like, can you check this out? Can you look at this? Can I get your cell phone? Will you you just keep track of this? And I might need to call you. Middle of the night, he's a little freaked out.
It's not good when your favorite website is WebMD.
No, and I think that you're doctor has a military background, so I wonder if he's going to have a tolerance for Roe, being soft.
Drop and give me 20.
Yeah.
We saw the great Ed Farmer in person. That's the last time we're going to see Ed in person for a while because he's got a busy job and he's on the road a lot. But we'll see him at the...
We'll see him next week, a week
from
today.
We'll see him at guaranteed rate, obviously, as we get started with another White Sox season, we think. Good morning, Ed Farmer.
Good morning, guys and girls. How are we doing?
We're doing great. Good. And is there going to be baseball today?
Somewhere. I hope it's here in Kansas City. Yeah. We're calling for thunderstorms about game time. So, I don't know. As Tara and I are having breakfast, we're discussing. There's no sense of pushing it back to tomorrow. Tomorrow's weather is supposed to be the same as today, although right now it's about 70 degrees here and the sun's trying to break through, but the clouds and rain are on their way. But we'll see. It could be hit and miss. Could go north of us. We could play 9 innings interrupted as well. Uninterrupted.
Are pitchers better at rain delays because pitchers don't work every day necessarily, so you knew how to spend the time?
That's a great question. Bullpenners, I know one thing. They're not adjusted like that. The starters, oh, yeah. They go back. They get crossword puzzle. They go in, watch the little TV, work the crossword puzzle, walk around. Annoy the other players, and they're ready to go. Bullpenners are regular day players, but it's basically what you become.
and you're like everybody else. Let's get this game going so we can beat them.
What do you think is going through the mind of a Carlos Rodon this morning as he gets ready to make his first major league, his first opening day start?
I told Don Cooper today, I was going to walk by him and say, you don't have to be the best pitcher in baseball today, Carlos. Just the best one at Kauffman Stadium. That's all we're asking.
There you go.
It's not a big deal. Let's go get him. He's got the arm. He's a great kid. We'll see how he performs today. I think he's going to pitch well. I've got nothing to prove that, but I think he's going to pitch well. He's got dynamic stuff, and we'll unsafe for the whole show today against these Kansas City Royals. They're going to start Brad Keller, who they got from the, I think they got him from the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he's making his first major league start of the season, but he's also first time he's ever opening a season as starter that day. That's big.
And we've talked about one rookie quite a bit, but you made the point Sunday in Phoenix when we were in the booth with you. White Sox got a lot of exciting young kids.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to start with Eloy Jimenez in left field, unless he gets hurt on the way to the park. he's got everything you need. I know he's young, so these steps are going to be, they're going to certainly flirt with you to say this guy can do this, and he's going to backtrack and he's going to pull back a little bit. It's just normal. They're going to make a change. The defense is going to make a change against him, and they're going to drive him crazy for about a week, and then he's going to find out what they're doing to him, and then he's going to drive them crazy for the rest of his career.
Ed, how comfortable does Moncada look to you at third base, and how might that affect him at the plate if he's feeling nice and comfortable there?
He, he was a gold glover at second base, and he's the same at third. I didn't know the transition for him was going to be that easy. And maybe he's played there before. I haven't talked to him about it because we get in and get out of the spring training, we're done for the day, and we leave. But I'm going to talk to him today. We might have a lot of time to talk if the rain comes in there the way they say it could. But he's made this transition to third base. For me, the read on one of the first games we did, there was a line drive that hit the pitcher, and it rolled towards third base. Usually a third baseman, the line drive up the middle, he's looking at the ball, the continuation of the play to see it going in center field. So he comes running in, and in the air, picks it up, and then he's floating in the air, and he throws the guy out of first base. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. The normal player is not going to make that. The guys who played years at third base, they're probably not going to make it as well. But he was up to the test and threw the guy out by a stride and a half at first. He's going to learn some things over there. He's going to learn how to play here or there and with a shift on. But he's a quick study. He's got an abundance of talent. Really does.
Next Thursday, we will be live with you from Guaranteed Rate.
I hope so.
Looking forward to seeing you in person again.
So if it's the other part of that, I really don't want to participate if it's, if we're not live. So.
Yeah, that's true. Live is an important part of that equation.
Oh, exactly right.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
How's Don doing? How's Roe doing?
He's doing fine.
What's he doing, the poor guy?
Well, we didn't do anything really too serious to him. I mean, he'll recover. But thanks for having us in the booth. We had a good time Sunday.
Well, we're going to have it catered next Thursday.
Ed, were they behaving? Because I heard the story about how lovely everyone was and just how seamless this trip was and everything was professionally done. And this is what we heard back at the headquarters here. What did you observe?
You watched to see if his nose was growing.
Yeah, the concern. The concern was Roe might have taken Ed's wallet. That's the one thing we were concerned about.
It's just a Pinocchio pill. Sure he
did. All right, Ed Farmer. Have a great call today or tomorrow or whenever you finally get baseball.
Well, hopefully we'll get it in today and call a White Sox winner. Thanks for having me. You guys have a great day. Go Sox today.
There you go.
Thanks, Ed.
Look forward to talking to Ed Weekly. All right, we come back. Anna will explain the Mueller report to us and whether or not we're screwed. Stand by, because I think that's on the last page. It's 300 pages long, and the whether or not we're screwed question doesn't get answered until the last page.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, that's my friend Anna DeVontis. She's here
good
with
to be
us.
With you guys.
Nice to have you here. All right, so I haven't talked to you since the Mueller report came out.
I know.
Is it a what kind of moment, or is there going to be more to come? What's your news person's instinct.
Sort of the instinct on it is that this four-page summary with the principal conclusions from William Barr is, you know, is enough to feel as if, look, there was no criminality there in the president's actions. So I can't imagine someone with William Barr's experience not representing that correctly. However, the devil's in the details, right? You have a 300-page report, if you believe the New York Times sources, that's what it is. And what else is in there? What's the viewpoint of a William Barr about obstruction of justice versus what Bob Mueller's view might be? Is there any differentiation? I really just don't think that a guy like William Barr, who's been an attorney general, didn't need this job, somebody who he knows it's all going to come out anyway. He's not going to misrepresent it. But what details are there in there? I think we all deserve to know.
And is there something Mueller did to protect his end of it? In other words, if his boss, Barr, said, I got it from here, you know, give it to me, I'll make the decision. Is there some legal maneuvering that we don't understand as lay people that was done that protects Mueller's work, Mueller's interest in it, if Barr is hiding something?
Yeah, hiding something is strong, though, because I just...
It does seem right. It does seem like, why would Barr... Because we're all going to see it in some form eventually.
It's going to come out. It's going to come out.
But what if it's all redacted? What if just the prepositions are available?
I think that's going to look highly suspicious, and I don't think we'll accept that as the right, fair way to deal with this. However, that obstruction of justice part piece is what you keep hearing. Was there just not enough to bring charges? Do you just not bring charges against a sitting president? But what sort of underlying evidence was found? You know, those kinds of details, they matter. I think we should know. And then I think we should accept the results.
I think we should just say whatever Lester Holt says goes, because he's the guy that sat down with him.
And he sat down with Comey, and he was there in the beginning when those discussions were made.
Yeah.
We remember him.
Bill and Wendy will join us in a second. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. You know, Anna, when you were doing this show regularly, I don't remember you making fun of me the way these people do.
Yeah, it's terrible, Steve, isn't it? It's really the way they undermine you.
Ridiculous. The shots
unacceptable.
That I take.
And you don't give anything back either.
I don't do that to people.
Just stand there.
How do people do that to me?
Totally.
Bill, you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, sure.
Nobody knows the troubles I've seen.
That's for sure.
Now, we know Rokan's listening now, so Anna, first, thank you for coming in. And we do want to make a major announcement right now, and that is that Anna is still on the Rokan show.
Right.
That's the major announcement, and you'll be on this afternoon right after the baseball game, or possibly in lieu of a rainout. So
may have to have a rainout today. But
say hi to the family.
I will.
See you next week.
Mm-hmm.
Provided you come back and join us.
I will.
Bill and Wendy are here. Have you met these two?
I love Bill.
They're very popular.
Yeah, we're friends.
It's been a long time.
No.
Yeah. Have you ever inhaled through your nose?
Not a joint.
Okay, next question.
Bill, what are you doing on the show today?
Well, it's the start of baseball season.
What?
So Babe Ruth will be with us.
Is that right?
Yeah, we got Babe Ruth.
That's a good book.
The Bambino.
He was on the beat last week.
Yeah, he does a good job, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We do have a guest at 10:15. If you've ever watched Adam Ruins Everything on True TV, I love this guy, Adam Conover.
That's where he tells the truth about stuff,
exactly.
Right?
Everything.
Yeah.
He's great. He'll be with us
in
at
a time, Steve, where the truth is hard to come by.
And hard to hear.
Yes.
Is he going to ruin your show? I mean, he ruins everything.
He does ruin everything.
So it's going to be a terrible segment. Adam's going to ruin the segment.
I don't know why we're doing it.
10:15.
Doesn't make sense.
We'll be back tomorrow. Try to fix whatever was done here today. Here's Wendy.